Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 297th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Ryan Godoy. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we've got Vikkel Parikh on the show. He's the founder and a director for Attaboy Studios, which is a animation commercial house that does all sorts of awesome stuff. They do all sorts of mixed media. I shouldn't limit them just to animation, though. Vikkel is...
Yeah, they do live action, VFX.
All sorts of stuff.
That's some
all
incredible work.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. And he talks about being an entrepreneur. He talks about having a non-film background and how that kind of was a foundation for him. He was an architect, and how that was a foundation, pun intended, for his filmmaking career, and how they source directors to work with. It's a really cool, really organic conversation. You know, I thought really good if you're curious about kind of that world of animation, motion graphics, visual trickery that has kind of evolved over the last 20 years.
Yeah. What else I thought was interesting is how he, you know, he was an employee at a bunch of different companies working on all these commercials, and he decided to leave on his own to start his own company right when he had a baby, because he felt like having his own company would give him the flexibility he needed to, you know, be able to do his life stuff. And it's an interesting industry we work in, though I guess nowadays, in the pandemic days, everyone is working from home in every industry. But we do, as much as we hustle and as much as we work crazy long hours for no money, we do still have this kind of flexible industry, especially when we are working for ourselves and when we're freelancers, when we're contractors, when we're vendors, when we start our own companies. We can decide when we're working and when we're not working. And maybe we'll work all weekend, but we'll be able to, you know, take an afternoon off to go, you know, do something with our family.
I feel it the most when I'm on vacation, because I'll be like, oh, I just took off. Like, I'm in Palm Springs right now on a Wednesday and I'm working some of the time. But I wouldn't be able, you know, if I had an office job, I wouldn't be able to just pick up and go somewhere. So it is, yeah, there is some evolving flexibility for people. You know, also sometimes you just feel like you can never say no to things. So that's tricky too.
Yeah. Well, how's life? You're 2.5 weeks into having a child, mm-hmm. into no longer being in control of your own time.
That is true.
How has that affected you, your life and your career?
Yeah.
I know it's early to ask.
No, it's actually good timing, though, because today we're recording on a Tuesday. Yesterday was my first day back to like work. You know, I've been doing a lot of creative direction lately. And so I'm part time right now, basically. And so it's a real learning curve in terms of figuring out what my bandwidth is and what my baby is going to decide my bandwidth is. But today was especially good, I think. And so we're just trying to learn how to, you know, change a diaper one handed while you're noting a video on your phone, you know,
on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, the amount of muting I've had to do the past 2 years on conference calls and like turning off the camera because insane stuff is happening at my house is crazy. I'm curious, what's the biggest thing, or what's one thing you learned about babies that you didn't know 3 weeks ago?
So there's two related facts. One, when people say like, oh, my baby is sleeping through the night, they mean that there is some regularity to when your baby goes to sleep, right? Like, not that you're getting 8 hours of sleep, which I never really thought was the case. Like, babies basically need to be fed every 2 to 3 hours, period. You know what I mean? Like, if a baby slept for 8 hours, it would be bad for them.
Yeah, in like a couple months, they can sleep.
Yeah. That's a different deal. Different deal. Yeah. But currently, that's not the case.
But that was shocking to you. Like, that's not something you realized before you had the baby.
No. But the thing that is shocking to me is that the clock starts on that 2 to 3 hour window when you start the feed, not when you finish. And that is a bummer.
Feeding the babies takes like half an hour.
But my baby likes to take her sweet time. And so it can be a half hour. It could be an hour. You know, like they're, especially early on, they talk about she's not actively drinking this whole time, but she's self-soothing. And also, that's a way for a baby to help more milk come in, basically. Like all of that is like designed
the whole
to
milk.
Like,
biology
milk coming
is,
in is really complicated and strange. But so as a result, my kid could be like, hey, I'm going to sort of half doze, but my wife and I are both up for the feedings. I'm like helping her out, giving her water, all of this stuff. But so the 3 hours that we have to sleep is getting eaten into the longer this kid is taking her sweet time, dozing off. Oh, maybe she's done. Nope, she's still at it. And that was a surprise to me. That was a surprise. But honestly, I shouldn't complain at all, because I think that actually we've been very lucky. The baby is pretty darn good. And I think that there are plenty of challenges that lay ahead. But I think generally speaking, she's on the easier side. So
yeah, that's great. At some point, you'll realize that you should not be awake while the baby's feeding, because if you get your sleep while the baby's sleeping, then maybe you can wake up and like clean the house and do the other things, you know?
Yeah. I have been doing, in order to stay awake, I've been cleaning. Basically, I get them set up. I will go clean. Like, that's dishes time. That's laundry time, all that stuff. And then I'll kind of like come back to like help put her to bed. Cool. But this is also all before you can give her a bottle either, which is part of it. So
yeah. Have you been peed on yet?
I've been shit on, bro. Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Speaking of dropping stuff on Matt and Oren, we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a place where you can drop some nuggets of coin.
Patreon.com/dadtalk.
We accept Bitcoin and Ethereum now as well. But yeah, $1 a month, $4, $10 gets you a Just Shoot It podcast hat. It's all the rage. All the rage. By the way, I'm in Branson, Missouri today, and I went to the NRA Gun Museum.
Oh, my God.
They literally have, like, all these famous guns. They have the sniper rifle from American Sniper. They have the gun from Lone Survivor. So it made me feel, as a Hollywood person, more accepted in this gun culture. But it's different than the Los Angeles culture,
not,
for sure.
Not my favorite. That is for sure.
But I will say, how did I get to guns? I will say that this Just Shoot It hat that I wore there made me the most popular guy in the gun museum.
Whoa. It makes me think about changing the name of the show, actually.
There's literally people in there with shirts that said, I will not comply, and like, you know, a lot of Let's Go Brandon. Anyhow, all good. You can like or not like whatever you want. But what you should like is the Just Shoot It hat. $10 a month. At Patreon, even just 1 month, it's a great deal. Patreon.com/justshootitpod. Check it out.
You've only got a month left before we change our prices, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Cyber Monday. Cyber December.
Cyber December.
It's your last option, your last chance. Cool. Well, without further ado, here's potentially an ad and definitely Vickle Parikh.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, we're here with Vikkal Parikh. Thanks for joining us from New York City.
Attaboy,
at
Vikkal.
Midnight.
Attaboy. Hey, guys. Yeah, it's midnight. How's it going, guys? I'm psyched to be talking to you.
Well, we're glad you can be here. So tell us a little bit about what you do and your company, just to give a lay of the land.
Yeah, I am the executive creative director slash director at Attaboy. Founder. I started Attaboy, 9.5 years ago. And it stemmed from the fact that I was, too entrenched in a post-production facility for like 5-6 years and, didn't really get an opportunity to explore the storytelling aspect of, the short form commercials, like the 30 seconds, where we were just asked to like work on visual effects or, design or animation. So it was just like, very piecemeal, very broken down, and you never got the full picture. And I always had an inkling that, if we were to do this from the beginning, this is how we would do it. So, that was kind of like the foundation of where I wanted to take my career. And we started doing that a little bit at Red Card. That's where I started. And we started doing that. We, sort of created an offshoot called Redhead, where we were doing motion design and animation. But again, I think it was sort of the heyday of, motion graphics. So people were paying lots of money to just make an end tag and like things fly around in 3D and shiny and, was kind of like the hot thing. So I don't think anyone at the company was too invested in, sort of helping us explore this storytelling aspect of it at that point. So,
and was that like After Effects, Cinema 4D type stuff?
It was more Maya After Effects, yeah. More like Maya After Effects. And then we would
I think just to interject for a second, I think something interesting about it is I think there are probably a lot of people that like love Marvel films, love movies, and they want to get into visual effects because they want to tell stories with visual effects. And then they get into the industry and they realize they're working on like 1 second of a movie, sure. One part of 1 second, and they don't get to see the movie.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, like they obsess over smoke. Like you have, like smoke specialists, like people that just create rains, that create just, the fur on a character, like have nothing to do with the character. And I think, that's a very specialized field. So for someone like me that kind of wants to sort of be involved in everything, it seemed a little out of place for me personally.
I think something else that stood out to me is that you were saying the heyday of motion graphics, right? And I guess I hadn't even really realized until you said it that like, oh, there was that moment when like just like cool design was like a really like exciting thing, Like we're talking about like 05 to probably 2015, maybe give or take. It was like, oh, that is like a whole commercial would just be like cool graphics basically, and that it has kind of gone away basically. But like to your point of like, oh, like you grow up thinking I want to make movies, and then all of a sudden you're just like making sure that the hair on this gorilla looks awesome. similarly, you can be like, oh, I'm a designer, and all of a sudden you're just like making cool swirls for, you know, an Apple commercial. And that's like the top of the industry. That would be like the brass ring, basically, right? So it's interesting to me that you had the self-awareness and the motivation to be like, oh, this isn't, I've built out these skills, but this isn't what I want to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of it's, so I'm not a very like a classical artist or filmmaker per se. My background is bachelor in architecture. So I grew, you know, I graduated being an architect.
So you started in CAD basically. And then you were,
I did do CAD. Yeah. This was like in 1999. So CAD was, you know, very basic. So I got interested in, you know, 3D visualization. So it was more about like the holistic process. So everything that I became interested in came very organically. So I started doing like CAD and, you know, 3D started being interesting. And then I started working on that. And then I'm like, well, what if we, you know, did animation with this? So it's just not like camera moves, like, you know, things that are moving and animating and adding a layer of graphic design. And they started calling that like motion design, motion graphics at that point. And then once we started doing that, we learned to tell stories using just typography and animation. And, you know, and then over time, we started adding a layer of live action to it. You know, like what if a person would interact with graphics or a person would interact with animation? Graduated to involving character. And so it's a growth, it's journey. And, you know, I get bored really fast. So I hate doing the same thing again. And that's why, you know, a lot of my work also is sort of all over the place. Like, you know, people are like, oh, I, you know, I'm a comedy director. I'm a, you know, visual effects director. I'll probably do like a few of each. And then like, if the same thing keeps coming, then we pass on it. And I think that's sort of our studio mentality as well. Like we'll never, like if a client comes to us with like, hey, I saw you guys did that. I want just that. But, you know, for our brand, then that's not the right project for us. You know, it's really...
I mean, what if they're like, we have $1 million? They still say that's not the right project for us?
Maybe. If they have $1 million, I might do it. But it, mostly when people say that, they don't have that much money. You did it last time. So, you know, when a brief comes in like that, then we usually, you know, ask them if they're open to other ideas. And, you know, a lot of times... they are, you know, sometimes they're not. They're like, no, this is perfect, you know, for our brand. And if they, you know, have a justification for it, like why it's perfect, then, you know, we might consider it. But otherwise, like, just you don't want to be known as a studio that does the same thing over and over. And, you know, we are sort of a small, tight-knit group. So, you know, we have a shorthand and we like to explore. We like to do different things. And everyone at the studio comes from, you know, different walks of life. Like someone's a photographer that got into animation. There's a director, you know, that's, they were like editors, became directors. And it's just a very eclectic mix. So for us, just coming together to sort of achieve this fun little exercise of creating commercial is an exploration itself. So we really enjoy what we do. You know, we are, and I'm sure most filmmakers really like the process of exploration more than actual execution, because that's really what it is, you know, like exploring, whether it's a technique, style, color palette, you know, acting, whatever it is. Like, I think you want to play. And I think that's really what we enjoy the most. So we keep jumping from one thing to the other.
So at some point you were... so you wanted to do more storytelling. So you, instead of getting a job as like a director somewhere, you started your own place?
Yeah, pretty much. I also wanted some flexibility in my life. And I think at that point, like I was at a point where you guys are, like I had a newborn and I needed that flexibility. My first, you know, baby. And I was like, maybe, you know, I worked really hard for those 5-6 years to build what I was. And then I was like, maybe either A, I take it easy, and two, I always had this entrepreneurial itch that, you know, what if I did it the way I wanted to do? And, you know, my wife was on board and she was like, yeah, now is the time to do it, you know? And so I did it. And, you know, just like really good teammates and really good, you know, partners in crime, I think helped shape us the way we are. You know, even if they're not with the company anymore, I think every single person has contributed to the way Attaboy has evolved into what we are right now. And I think that's really, really important. Like, we take a long time to get in bed with someone, like, you know, whether it's like hiring someone or, you know, hiring a director. I think, you know, we'll sort of take it easy. And, you know, unless it's like fully vetted, we're not going to get into a relationship. But, you know, once we do, we know it's the right thing for us both. And I think that's really helped us along the way.
I want to go back a little bit and talk about those early first steps of forming Attaboy, because I think that that could be something that's really interesting, right? So you've got this body of work, you know, you've got the support of your family, you're motivated, right? And you have maybe a few people in mind that you like to work with. How do you book that first job? What are those first tangible steps that you took to found the company?
Yeah, I think at that point, it was a different point in time where being a freelancer was sort of just work for hire. And I don't think like bigger agencies or brands were open to just working with freelancers. So they, you know, if the biggest obstacle I had was, you know, starting a new company was not to be perceived as I'm going freelance. Like, I, you know, had to establish the fact that, you know, I'm venturing and starting another thing, and we are going to do similar thing, but, you know, slightly different and slightly bigger and, you know, more meaningful and, you know, really like making a little bit of impact. So, you know, there were so many people, I was like, oh my God, like I worked with these people for 4 or 5 years. If I start my own company, they'll come work with me. Never happens. Like, they all like tread lightly.
You mean
they
were client-wise.
Clients,
yeah.
Yeah. They're like friends, but clients, but you know, you'll never get directly work from them because, you know, you are coming from a bigger place and, you know, they're not sure where you are, support system. So they're all treading lightly. So yeah, that never worked out. So I was like, okay, what's the plan B? Like, what do I do to keep doing what I do and what I love doing? So I started approaching a lot of nonprofits, you know, and just at that point, like I'd see the content they put out and it was so poor. And, you know, I'm like, these guys deserve better. These guys, you know, they have a very important message that they want to send across to people. I think, you know, they need better support. So I reached out to, you know, UNDP, like some people we knew at UNDP, like I reached out to them, you know.
Sorry,
I reached out.
What's UNDP?
United Nations developmental program, then reached out to CARE.
And these are places that you had previous contacts with? You knew
no,
a few people over there?
No, just
so you cold called them? Yeah, you just kind of
I cold called a few, and then like when people saw the work, you know, on Vimeo or whatever, I think nonprofits reached out to us. And at that point, like we wouldn't see profitability. You were like, yep, I'll just do this. The only condition is it has to be done our way. Like, you know, we want to tell a story. As long as the story aligns with what you want, like you guys will not like nitpick a lot about like what a character looks like or what style it is. Like, you know, and I think that's something that we want to bring to the table. You know, we'll make sure the story aligns with what you guys, you know, want to tell.
Why reach out to a nonprofit instead of making like a spec, you know, a cereal commercial or something?
You know, because one nonprofit, it helps them. Like, they're going to use a piece of content that we do that'll serve a purpose. So, you know, all the pixels are not going to just dog and pony show. Like, they'll actually get mileage out of it. And then two, you know, it's for better
cause.
Can you
tell us what a dog and pony show is real quick for people that don't know? That's
a dog
like
and pony show.
Thing in the commercial world.
Yeah, in the commercial world, dog and pony show is basically you peddling your wares, like, you know, whether it's a spec spot or like 4 or 5 of your best commercials. Like when you in an old New York thing, like where you have this long overcoat and you open it up and you're like, hey, what do you want? Yeah, do you want this? Do you want this? What do you want? I got everything. So I think it is a little bit of that in the advertising world. Like people want to see what you've created and what you're capable of before they actually start working with you. And if they have anything specific in mind, they want to see that on their reel, you know, before they engage with you. So I think that's really the dog and pony show. We do that all the time. Go to agencies, you know, put out all our directors' best work, you know, see if it aligns, just give them a taste of what Attaboy is about, you know, just follow up afterwards. So that's the dog and pony show. But so we developed a portfolio. We developed, you know, certain animation style that we couldn't have done otherwise. And we got to learn. We got to play around. And like I said, like I didn't come from a, you know, a solid like filmmaking storytelling background. So it's not like I did this. I did go to art school and, you know, I had experience with stuff in post-production and, you know, telling these like micro-sized stories, but not really like a 2-minute video where it starts to end, like with a story curve. So we got to experiment, we got to learn, you know, any mistakes that we made, like with the nonprofit, they didn't seem, you know, that crazy. Like, you
like
know,
a
they
little
don't
lower
have,
stakes.
They're like, oh, so there's more ovarian cancer this year because Nichols.
A lot of times, like we, so like this one thing we did for sex trafficking, and we decided to, you know, just paint every frame in Photoshop.
Like rotoscoping?
So it wasn't rotoscoping. It was before like Procreate and stuff came out. So we wanted to use specific brushes to, you know, create these illustrations and add the texture and stuff like that. You could do it with cell animation, but then you'd have to run it through Photoshop to add those textures and be very selective about like where you, you know, mess it up and the way you, you know, have like splatter or like how things sort of distort. I mean, at that point, Photoshop wasn't really ready for that. So they had just introduced layers and a timeline. A layer timeline, and you were just able to like paint it like frame by frame. And after a while, that shit got so heavy, like we'd have like Photoshop crash, like and burn. But
right. Like 5 gig PSD files.
Yeah, huge. Oh my God, more like 25, 30 gig PSDs. Like they're huge. But that was a labor of love. It took way longer than we anticipated because, you know, obviously we had a lot of technological backfires.
Can I ask just logistically, you're doing this job for free. I'm assuming you need multiple artists to do this, right? Because it's kind of like you said, labor intensive. How are you? Are you paying them or is everyone just like, hey, can you give me 800 hours for free?
No, every single one got paid and their commercial day rate. We invested in these jobs. So, you know, we had like some commercial work that would come in that wasn't as interesting. And then we invested in these projects and, you know, we made sure that these projects got a lot. So a lot of artists actually did donate, you know, their time into this. So, you know, they would charge for like 3 days and work for five, you know, or they'd be like, hey, I'll take a week down. Then we'd find someone else, you know, for that week. And then would, you know, they would come back on. So they did donate some of the time, but nobody worked for free. I don't like making people work for free. So we just, you know, worked it out with them. There was sort of a specific arrangement. If a job was paying, like we did actually tell them to hold off that billing, you know, for that week because we were booking them 2 weeks down the line. And so we said just up the rate to make up for, you know, this 1 week that you worked for. So
everyone's made whole more or less. But I think maybe to Oren's point, you know, you've got these passion projects that the studio is doing, but you're still keeping the lights on with other work. Where did that other work come from? Were those pre-existing relationships or how did the meat and potatoes work get booked?
So a lot of it actually came from, you know, some existing relationships in the post-production world. So there were a lot of, there was an edit house at Cosmo Street and my wife work there and they didn't have any animation resource. So, you know, they would sort of rely on us for animation. So it was a lot of meat and potato work, you know, to get done there. And they were very, very graceful in sort of helping me out as well because I was starting. And yeah, it was, you know, a very sort of symbiotic relationship where they had the ability to get things done the way they wanted to do. And we just got a steady stream of work. So that was the first 2 years. That's really what kind of paid the bills. And we used that to bolster our portfolio. And, you know, like, because starting a company, it's not like there's no shop front. There's no like, you know, window. So you don't really have to, it was a small space. And this was the investment I did. You know, like these projects to build up a portfolio for the studio was the investment I was willing to make. So, yeah, I didn't get paid for the first 9 months, but it's like the money goes back into the company, you know, but that's really the joy and that's the, you know, entrepreneurial spirit that you should go into when you're trying to start something up.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What's interesting and noteworthy about that, though, is that I think there is a slight difference between asking someone to donate a little bit of time or cut their rate or something on, say, on a one-off project, a short film or even an indie film or something like that, versus you're building a company and there is a steady stream of paid work coming in, right? So it's not like, hey, donate some time to me and then maybe I'll see you at the premiere. It's like, hey, you know, this week, help me out on this passion project. I think it's going to be really cool. It'll be on your reel as well. But don't worry, next week, you've got something that we're both maybe a little less excited about, but you're going to make rent. You know what I mean? And I think that that is a really great position to be in terms of like investing in those passion projects for people.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Like just helping them out. And I have to like give it to New York and the community of artists that we have here. Everyone's like super collaborative. Like there's never been like one person like we've reached out to has shown like a middle finger. Be like, yeah, F off. Like I don't want to do this. You know, everyone's been like super kind. You know, some people say, hey, you know what? I can't really invest a lot of time into this because I'm super, super busy. But if you want, if you have someone junior that does it, and then you want me to just sort of add a layer of, you know, finesse over it, I'll be happy to do it like on a Saturday or a Sunday. So I can't do 5 days, but I can, you know, put in like a few hours over the weekend to get it to a level where, you know, you guys can take this further. So everybody we reached out to like was very, very helpful. And, you know, we collaborated with a lot of kids from school, like we from SBA and Fashion Institute, Pratt, like, you know, they would like come up and they would help us with animatics and, you know, creating just roughs and just to be a part of the process. So they got something out of it. And, you know, we were able to sort of tide over certain pre-visualization process that, you know, doesn't need like such expert craftsmanship. It's more about like take these storyboards and create sort of 3D models and then let's play with the camera to see, you know, how you would go from point A to point B and how this whole story lines up.
So I'm curious a little bit. So now you have a bunch of directors on your roster. I was just kind of clicking through them. How do you find like what, how does a director get onto your roster? Like what do you look for in a director? Let's say someone is new in the business and is trying to get repped by a production company.
With every director that we have on the roster, we've had a soft run with them. And, you know, there's a little bit of a history with whether me personally or the company or someone at the company has a little history. And we sort of, you know, see what our goals are. And if there's any sort of way we can help each other to achieve what we want to do, then, you know, we want to work with them. We do keep it rather small, so it's not like 20 directors on the roster. You know, it's a very tight-knit group of people. So it's like people we know, we can all work together. A lot of times the kind of projects we do, there are more than two people are involved. So like you'd have one director, you know, doing like food and the other person's doing the animation on it or like lifestyle and food or, you know, stop motion or mixed media kind of stuff, and then live action lifestyle stuff. So you have like multi-layered approach and each director has to work well with the other. And so there's no sort of power struggle, so to speak. And that's why, you know, we still sort of go with the company. We don't call it Attaboy Production. We are like Attaboy Studios. You know, we kind of work with that sort of studio mentality where everyone's coming together as a whole and working together as a team to achieve this sort of piece of cinematic excellence, as we call it. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like it's two of you can, you know, talk about stuff and come to a common agreement. And I don't think there are many people that you can do that with. And I think it's just finding the right group of people that can work well with each other, where egos don't clash. And it's more collaborative and, you know, it's more fun.
Yeah, I love all that stuff. I mean, I guess from like a director's standpoint, I am curious if there's any element of, hey, we need someone that has worked with kids, or we need someone that's good at comedy, or like we have a hole to fill, you know?
Yeah.
Like someone that's great at shooting cars, and like, hey, this person has really great cars on their reel, so we can use their reel to land this job. You know, we know that we'll get the animation on top of it. We just need someone that can prove that they can shoot cars.
A lot of directors, like we start off as like a soft relationship, like freelance directors. So a lot of them will start off saying like, hey, we have a need. And even every now and then, like we'll find a particular piece of work that needs to be done, or a board that comes our way. And you're like, oh man, I know this guy. He's got like kids, like you just mentioned, like kids. He's got kids on his reel, work with kids. So we approach him like, hey, you know, we have this job, work with us. And they're like, great. Okay. We can work with you on this job. And they would direct, and, you know, we do the other stuff, we'd produce it. And whether it's a loan out or the director is freelance or with another production company, I mean, you know, we'll like figure out arrangements. At the end of the day, everyone wants to make money, and everyone wants to support their talent. So, yeah. So we've done relationships like that. And a lot of those relationships have actually blossomed, you know, into them being like, yeah, let's just keep working together. You know, like I like working with you guys. You know, like a first director signing, like Cordon or Cordy, as they call him. I've known him for like over a decade and a half. Like I've known him since he was like right out of NYU film school. You know, like he's very motivated, very gung-ho.
And, you met him through him, like
through a common friend at Red Card, through a common friend. He, you know, he was doing this pilot for some TV show and they needed graphics. So I was there and they were like, hey, will you do graphics? That was our first foray into it. And then we needed to shoot something and we were like, oh man, who are we going to use to shoot this? And then he came to mind and he did it for us. And when I started Attaboy, you know, there were like multiple jobs we were pitching and we were like, hey, do you want to do the live action portion of it? You know, you have a reel, that's great. So we put him up as a director. And, you know, over the course of 2 or 3 years, like we pitched so many jobs and worked on so many jobs together. You know, he was like, both of us were like, hey, you know what? I think it just makes more sense to like, you know, for you to like come work with us full time as a director. I think we'll gain more, you know, out of it. And I think it's been a very great relationship. Like we are able to talk to each other, like directors, you know, like Andrew, he's great with like people and food and, you know, things like that. But, you know, he's always like intrigued about like the VFX part of it. Or if there's any complicated like VFX wizardry with the shoot, before he goes into it, you know, we'll have like a 30-minute conversation, you know, be like, how would you do this? Here's my thought, you know, and then we would talk it through and, you know, it helps him. You know, it helps everyone. It helps me when I'm directing stuff. And, you know, a lot of times, like you're directing, like I don't do comedy, but a lot of times there'll be like this sort of, what you call like a wink and a smile kind of, you know, comedic performance. Like it's not really like comedy, but there's like a little, you know, and,
to it.
Yeah. And then I'd reach out to like a director, like Cordy, I'd be like, hey, you know, I want to try to get this performance out of talent. Like, you know, what is it that I need to do or how do I approach that? And like, we just talk about it and it's just kind of like a fun exploration and everyone gets to, you know, read and see each other's treatments. And, I gotta tell you, like doing treatments is my favorite part. Like I know a lot of directors like hate it. Like I love doing treatments and I just, because that's like the most raw thought process you put together for a project. And I love it before it gets destroyed. So, you know, we share each other's treatments, you know, look at it, be like, take a quick look at it. You know, this is due Monday. Here's where I am Friday evening. And, you know, we'll go through it and, play with it a little bit, you know, give suggestions if need be. And so that's really, so to get back to your point, like it's someone that you can go out and have a drink with and chat, you know, that's the kind of directors we want to work with because, you know, that really leads to more collaborative approach. And I think like at Attaboy, there's really no place for like a singular talent. Like, you know, I think it's definitely about collaboration.
It's purely collaboration. I love that.
It's funny when we talked to Sam from First Ave Machine, that was their same attitude, you know, which is like, this is a collaboration. And I think it's because it's kind of this mixed media, you know, approach that you guys take. Like, there's going to be animation, the live action.
Someone that's going to do animation and understand VFX, all of those different disciplines, in order to do something cutting edge, you know, you really have to be quite involved and immersed in that. And it's really hard to be, to wear that many different, an expert in five different fields. And when you're meshing all of them together to make something truly special and unique, you need experts on each different aspect of it. That's great. Yeah.
And for us, being a smaller company helps us, you know, compete at a larger scale too, because we have like experts in sort of each field and we're able to pull on them and, you know, bring them on as need be without actually having to rely on external sources, forces, talent. And so we are, you know, we feel comfortable doing like a variety of things and we feel confident sort of going head first into something we've never done before. So I think like that was that is our biggest. We could have all been engineers or doctors and made a lot of money, but we didn't do that. You know, we did this for a reason. And our lawyer, architects don't make money.
You know who was an architect? You know Joe Kaczynski, who directed Oblivion and Tron.
There are actually a bunch of directors who are architects and. To me, architecture is a great foundational, like art, you know, like helps
composition,
you.
Composition, design.
Light.
Yeah. Collaboration
scale,
as well, right?
Collaboration, scale. Yeah. So I definitely, my biggest inspiration in any sort of visual aesthetic, like comes from, you know, architects, like, you know, in terms of light, play, organic shapes, you know, how, you know, you feel in a space, like a scale. I think that's very important. And I think in filmmaking, it translates to lensing and, you know, things like that. But like eventually the emotion it evokes is sort of the same. Like you walk into a cathedral or you walk into a cave. I think, you know, there's an emotion that goes with it. And you just have to recreate that for the audience. And, you know, once you know how to experience it, you can, you know, probably recreate it.
That's interesting. That's like what I find, at least personally from my career and my work, the hardest thing and the thing that on every job I wish I could do better is show scale and scope and make, you know, make this, like the script says, oh, they walk into like the most posh, luxurious room that you've ever seen. And, you know, you go rent a mansion somewhere on Pure Space or something and you walk in and they're like, yeah, doesn't seem as posh and luxurious as I wanted to. But
The difference between just a room with nice furniture and what we're all dreaming of in our heads, there is like a degree of finesse that's hard to put your finger on. Yeah.
But having that architecture background.
Yes.
Yeah. Is like an interesting way into like, you know, you know how big a door is supposed to look. And when you put a person next to it, like if it's 2 feet taller, all of a sudden changes things. That's cool. The other kind of interesting thing you said that is actually kind of interesting, I think, for our listeners is this idea that like when you're making something, even if it's a short film and you're working, you're getting the mill to do the VFX or something because you got some hookup or ILM to do, or you find a, you know, a small post house or VFX house to do some work on it. Like it's always good to, like you never know when that relationship of you hiring them will flip around, like you said about Corydon, where they have a project that you're right for. You know, if you just directed some sci-fi short and you work with a VFX post house that is amazing at visual effects, but they don't have the live action reel, you know, they might want to see if they can pitch you to work on there. And so, like, I think it's interesting when you hire people to work on your stuff, like, even if they are just doing animation or just doing graphics or just like renting you the stage, like it's always good to approach that relationship with the idea that you guys can hire each other. It's not just a one-way street. It's not like a director just hires, you know, crew people to work on their shoots, but anyone with a company might be a potential employee.
Yeah, this whole like idea of like in filmmaking as a process, or even like it's, you know, like art form, like this whole like vendor client relationship is very ambiguous. And like you just said, like it can flip at any point in time. And you just have to sort of, you know, keep that one door open. And two, you know, just, yeah, I think the biggest measure of success, and I think it's a very Indian thing to do, like just growing up, like if you get paid 100 rupees or $100, you know, to do something, you do it worth $1,000, you know? And I think that's when like people will start appreciating you. It's like one bang for buck, and also like your dedication to the task, I think just shows like how sincere you are and, you know, how you approach a project. And I think that's definitely very important to like foundation of whether it's a relationship with another, you know, person. So if you were, you know, director going to the mill with for VFX, then giving them the right tool, like very detail oriented, you know, like this is what I want, like this lens flare to look like, or, you know, this explosion needs to look like this. Here's a GIF to explain like what it could look like, you know, color palette, like as detailed you are, I think the artist will respect that because at the end of the day, it takes guesswork out of it. And, you know, they know where to start and what they can add to it. So it's always good working, you know, knowing a little bit about stuff. And if you don't know, you know, just ask and just be a nice human being, you know, just be like, hey, I have no idea how this works, but, you know, this is my wish list. Let's work on it together and get there.
Well, so speaking of like guesswork and all that stuff, I'm curious your approach when you're directing, like you have on your website, a progressive commercial you did that looks like stop motion. I don't know if it really is stop motion or if it's CG, but how can you tell us a little bit about like that project specifically, Progressive Insurance? And so it's these tiny little people kind of building like in one of them, they build like a big cake, multi-layered cake.
Yeah.
What does Progressive come to you with? And then what is your process to like make the treatment and win that job and then actually execute it?
So I think with that job in particular, they wanted to create, so it's for small business, right? And the goal of the commercial was that for small business, everything's a big task. So even for a bakery, you know, just like making cakes and selling, like it's a big thing because they have to worry about so much logistics and things can fail. So the idea was that the thing they're making is oversized and it just feels huge. And they're using this sort of heavy equipment to like make these like really delicate, intricate designs on a cake, you know, for the bakery. So the bakery was one and the other one was landscaping. You know, for that, initially, they wanted to do stop motion. And I think stop motion just takes too much time. They didn't have the money to do it. And we didn't have the time to actually, you know, do stop motion. So
did they come to you with like any images or visuals or anything?
They came with certain examples of what it would look like. But, you know, a lot of it actually came out of what we presented back to them. They gave us like a board.
That's what I was going to ask, actually, because looking at those spots, they're so tactile. They're so they feel like stop motion. Right.
Yeah.
Which I assume is probably, you know, you said that, you know, that it's CG, but like they had wanted stop motion. So I assume in the pitch, you were like, don't worry, I've got a solution for how to make this feel stop motion and to give it a sense of scale and for everything to be miniature and to kind of play into all of the points that you were just making. But how do you illustrate that? How, like, you know, it can't just be a promise, I assume.
Yeah.
You know,
so for that, we found a lot of references. And, you know, there are a lot of artists that, you know, work with these sort of small characters. And, you know, do this, what you may call.
Yeah, like sort of they, like tilt live, shift, sort of miniaturized.
They take a real, like, flower, right? And then they'll have, like, two miniature guys that carry it. And it's usually done for stills. And I think, like, Progressive also sort of used something like that as a still, you know, and they shot, like, a still campaign for that. But there was no, like, motion. So we just took it, like, you know, a few steps further. They came to us with an example of what they thought looked good. And then so we came up with like, all right, here's a script and here's how we'll do. So for the pitch, what we initially did was some character design of what the characters could look like. They were definitely inspired. You know, one of our in-house artists, Ridvan, he actually designed those characters to, you know, make them feel a little more like, you know, doughy and, you know, inspired by those toy soldiers, you know, the plastic retro mm-hmm. toy soldiers. So,
or even like the Playmobil.
The Playmobil. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like really basic. So the character design. And then I thought like the best approach to get like a really good looking cake is to actually shoot a cake.
Oh, interesting.
So what we did was we created there's a behind the scenes for this entire project on the site too, but we created like the cake in four different stages. So we did the base layer, you know, then we did two layers, then we did the full cake with some decorations, and then two cake, and then all the layers with like some more decorations. And then we sort of did like a, you know, a spiral camera move. And I think that was the biggest idea, like this corkscrew move that you start at the base, you know, and that's where you start all the work. So you start with the base and you go around the cake. And by the time you come up top, like the cake is fully made. So we had to, so stop motion sort of helped us, you know, make time feel ambiguous. Like, you know, of course, like if you're building this and intricate, like you have to show real time. So with this sort of stop frame animation, it felt natural that we could cut time. You know, some of it was like sped up, like you'll see like some things are just like moving fast, some things are moving slow. So I think it's just like that corkscrew movement is something that we were able to sell through to the agency. And then we had to figure out how to do it. And then we worked with the prop team that was actually very great. They make wonderful styrofoam cake with fondant on top of it, made it like super ornate. And we just got to, you know, shoot it. We just had to shoot it fast because fondant melts, under lights. So you said,
and was it like some sort of mocap rig or is it just kind of like matching things? Yeah.
Like a
so it was belt. It was basically, you know, for the corkscrew, the cake was on a turntable and we just went up and down with a camera.
You just did it as consistently as you could.
And it sort of matched up because there were edit points, you know, going up. So we did a pretty detailed animatic for that, just using like a CG, you know, layered cake and just to see where the characters would be and just the timing of each shot. So we were able to sort of guesstimate like, all right, this move has to be like 10 seconds of, you know, top to down. So you break it down into like 3-second moves, you know, from one layer to the other to the other. That was our sort of guide. And since no characters were, you know, moving, we were able to speed or slow down the shot because there was no frame of reference.
Right. I guess that's true. You get a little bit of latitude there.
That's awesome. Well, cool. And I know we should wrap this up soon. I guess just to kind of finish off, do you have any advice to new people that are trying to get, that want to work on commercials and do, you know, kind of in the CG mixed media field, like how to get into it? Is it kind of like,
I mean,
make your own stuff, put it on Instagram?
Email Vickel at Attaboy and go work
please.
For free for a couple weeks.
No, don't even work for free. Just come. I love to talk to, you know, I love talking. I love to talk to people. So, you know, if you guys want to, feel free to publish my email address and have people reach out if they need help, questions, answers. But I just say, like, you know, you get better with doing more. So just don't worry about failing. Just keep doing it.
Just
you know,
render.
Just render it. Just keyframe it. You know, just keep doing it and try different stuff. Be open to, you know, experimenting. Like your first piece of art is not going to be the best. So, you know, you have to get through that hump. And, you know, now, thankfully, if you are interested in like CG and VFX and stuff, there's so many tutorials on YouTube. You don't even need to go to college anymore for that. Like you just like go to like YouTube University and learn everything you need to.
I have a question, actually. When you're hiring artists, do you care about where they went to school or are you just looking at their portfolio?
Definitely like portfolio.
If somebody came in and was like, I'm self-taught, I went to YouTube University, here's my portfolio.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not to underestimate. Yeah. Like you went to SCAD, right? Not like the art fundamentals that you learn that sometimes are missing from some like YouTube University.
Yeah.
Portfolio.
That's really the storytelling and just that sort of filmmaking, the basics that if you want to show something someone scarier, you look up, and like you want to like make someone feel smaller, you look down. Like just like those basics like are so basic for like filmmaking and just telling a good story within a certain amount of time. Like those kind of things are missing when you don't really get a formal education in like filmmaking or, you know, basic art and composition. Like, you know, it's just those kind of things are very hard to teach. A lot of YouTube university will teach you, you know, the technological stuff. But I have to tell you, the people that are teaching, they have good sense of aesthetic. So if you just, you know, follow those tutorials, you know, it's kind of like burned in your brain that, all right, this is good, this is bad. You know, this color correction, whatever, of skin looking too blue is not good. It does, you know, looks dead. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of this is also acquired, like knowledge. You know, when you work on stuff, work with other people, you know, every day, like, you know, you work with different DPs and you learn like certain techniques, you learn certain way to use natural light. And, you know, I think it all happens. So just be willing to soak up as much, you know, as you can. And keep those tutorials are gold mine. YouTube is the best.
Cool. Is there a software that you should learn first? Blender?
Blender, yeah, man. Like Blender, SketchUp, like just get your feet wet, you know. They all have the same basics, to be really honest, like Cinema 4D and Maya and stuff, a little more advanced. And you'll get there eventually, but, you know, you need to feel comfortable within that space. And, I mean, if you're starting now, like definitely get on to like Unreal Engine or Unity, you know. And that's really where everything is moving to. So no more rendering. Everything's real time.
Yeah. I love that you said SketchUp, because that's the first time anyone has ever said that. And I find it to be a little bit more approachable from an interface perspective. Like Blender is incredible, but it's just like you're constantly figuring out what the hotkeys are. And so like, if you're not looking to be a true VFX artist, but you just want to be conversant, you know, you just want to know how to like move around in 3D space and model something and know, you know, when you're talking to an artist, like a little bit about what they're going through, SketchUp can be pretty nice on that front.
Yeah. And now like even like in like the Oculus has this like modeling tool, you're playing with, like you can model, like, I mean, that kind of stuff were never there. Like when, you know, we were doing it. So I think now you have a lot access to like a lot more stuff. You know, where you can express your creativity. So there's really no reason to not do it, you know? Just keep playing, just keep doing stuff and sell it as NFT. People are buying whatever crap there is.
Well, yeah. Keep an eye out for all of my gray cubes on on the marketplace.
Go try to make a rectangle.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Awesome, guys. Well,
you like cubes better?
They're just so easy. Well, Vikkel, this has been great, man. Do you have a few more minutes to hang out and endorse with us?
Yeah, sure.
Unpaid endorsements.
So my unpaid endorsement actually is a recipe. I just refer to it as the giant pancake, but it's a Bon Appetit recipe for the giant no-flip blueberry pancake is what it's technically called. So the giant no-flip blueberry pancake. Like I said, we just call it the giant pancake. And basically what it is like you use like the biggest skillet you've got. You could use like a cast iron or like a frying pan, and you just fill it with pancake batter, and then you have it on the stovetop for a couple minutes, and then you put it in the oven, and then you just flip it out once, and it's kind of like an upside down cake, but it's just a giant pancake, and it is delicious.
Wait, when you say flipping it once, you mean in like onto a plate?
Onto a plate.
Or in the oven?
Onto a plate. Yeah, we use a big serving platter. Okay.
So there is a one
flip. There's technically one flip to get it out, basically. And then you slice it up like a cake, basically. And it's great for brunches or like all freeze slices that we don't use and throw them in the toaster later.
Is this pancake?
It's like a good 2 inches thick.
Yeah, it's like your skillet size, right? Like however deep your skillet or frying pan
exactly.
is. Like
that's exactly.
How deep it is. Yeah.
So here's the crucial detail is that when you're doing it on the stovetop, first you melt butter and oil into the skillet. And basically the oil raises the smoke point of the butter. So it gets real like crispy, crunchy. It's got like a little bit of cornmeal in the batter. So it's got like this just like great little like buttery, lattice-y top that is just, once you get it in, like once you get the hang of it, it's just perfection.
And it's just canola oil.
Yeah, canola oil or whatever neutral cooking oil you prefer. I'm a safflower oil man myself, but the giant no flip pancake on Bon Appetit is one that we have. It was a lifesaver during the heat of the lockdown. Just like comforting, delicious. It lasts a couple mornings, so that's my endorsement.
I'll check it out. I'm like the pancake man in my house. Like I make the pancakes.
It's a different deal. The skills will transfer, but it is
Learning curve.
There's a learning curve to it. Yeah, let me know if you I have a couple pointers. Awesome.
Okay, Vickle, what do you got?
So my unpaid endorsement is actually the book Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. It's basically the inner workings of Pixar and how, you know, they worked as a studio when they were small and how they grew big, and this all this talk that we've been talking about, like collaboration and, you know, things like that, like that, just that book really lays it thick, and it's a very good read, audiobook, or, you know, if you're reading, whatever. I think it's definitely something people in this like industry should, you know, pay attention to.
Yeah. You are not the first person to endorse it. Yeah. I think, yeah. Oren, you did it once, and maybe another, it's a favorite among 3D yes. CG people for sure, and I think worth resurfacing. That is for sure. I think it's been also at least a year or two since we've talked about it, so that's great.
Totally unrelated to CG, like it's to me the inspiring part of that book is that it's about how at Pixar you're encouraged to fail, like fail often, fail fast, so you get past the bad ideas and start honing, seeing what's working, what's not working. It's a very, very like iterative CG type of mindset, whereas like I think in commercials and narrative and all that, it's like it's all about confidence, right? You want a director that comes out and just knows exactly what they want to do and how they want to do it. And they're experts and they have such great taste. But at Pixar, it's like, no, let's try that. Not good. Great. We know that doesn't work. Now let's try the next thing. But they do have time and money on their side.
Well, but I think you can try those like little things that they have into your practice, you know, even when it comes to like commercial or filmmaking, like there's always like that little thing, like one, you know, definitely being open to criticism and being, you know, how they have this round table like every week and they talk about like everyone puts up their work and like just rip it apart. And you just, the director has to stand up to that shit. Like, you know, you have to have the balls. I don't know if you can say that, but you have to have, you know, the courage
to
actually.
Fortitude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The courage to like stand up to, you know, your peers. And basically having them, you know, talk about your work, not necessarily in good light, and, you know, actually take that criticism back and then do something about it or choose not to do something about it. It's your choice. But, you know, I think that's really what happens, right? Like commercial, like you come up with an idea, like a treatment, you have the entire thing mapped out. Like you're like, all right, this is how this shit's going to be. It's going to be great. The agency wants to work with, like, love your idea, Oren. Like, you are the best. Like, this is, fuck, love your vision. But we are going to change
it
all.
Never heard that before, but yeah, go on.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just have to sit and be like, all right, you know what? How do I sort of navigate this thing and really not take it too hard? And don't be afraid to try new stuff. I think that's what I got out of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. Love it. Well, Kaplan, great. What you got, buddy?
I'm going to give two quick ones. First one, just because you mentioned Photoshop, I learned this awesome Photoshop trick this week, which is if you are using the brush tool and you're brushing, you know, whatever your brush is, whether it's just like the standard default brush or like some complicated speckled brush or whatever that's pressure sensitive, if you hold down the tilde key on your keyboard and use the brush, it turns it into an eraser. So it's just a real quick way to erase in the same way that you're brushing, as opposed to going to an eraser, which is like its own brush. And sometimes it's not erasing, like you're drawing something really soft or speckled or something, and then you try to erase with this hard eraser, and it takes you back farther away than if you were just to invert your brush. So it's a cool thing I never knew about. And then my other thing that I've been doing lately is per my wife's encouragement, is I've gone to the doctor, which is something that I kind of like just don't like going to the doctor. but I went to like a general practitioner type person that gave me a physical and was like, hey, you should take these supplements and do these. I was kind of getting these like migraines, and she gave me this like magic medicine for them. And so it's kind of like been awesome. And then also I went to like the dermatologist. I was having like weird dry skin for like the past 2 years. I thought it was mask related, but it hasn't been. And she gave me this other like magical cream. And I'm like, what? This whole, for years I've been living with like headaches and dry skin, and I could have just gotten to the doctor and just fixed it all in like 2 weeks. And so, hey, if you're not, if you have an issue, maybe go to the doctor. I don't know.
Go see your doctor.
Hopefully you have health insurance. That's the catch. But yeah, anyway, so those are my endorsements.
Solid. Photoshop and
those
general
are good,
health. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a pretty eclectic mix on this. This is maybe the biggest spread from a giant pancake to a great book to go into the doctor's.
Listen, yes, to man. One keyboard key.
That's right. The tilde.
The tilde Swinton. We call
awesome.
It.
Well, Vic, that's right. Dude, this was so great. Thank you so much for talking to us. Where can listeners learn more about Attaboy Studios and yourself? Do you tweet? Do you Instagram? What's the best way to keep track?
Instagram. We're like very active on Instagram.
And where should they find you on Instagram? What should they
At search? Attaboy Studios.
And A-T-T-A-B-O-Y.
No, it's just one A. Sorry. It's at A-T-A-B-O-Y Studios.
Great.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much. If you want to have any questions, if you can't on your own figure out how to contact Vickle, feel free to email us. We're justshootitpod@gmail.com. You'll find all the notes on this episode at justshootitpod.com. You can find us across all social media at justshootitpod. I'm on Twitter. I'm at SmiteyPieleg. And on Instagram, I'm at O'Kaplan.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media. This episode was edited by Sarah Weirda. Thank you, Sarah. Great work as always. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Additional ad music by Jambox.io. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.